Welcome back to The Trendline from the SiriusXM studios in Washington, D.C. Here's Kristen Soltis Anderson.
I am joined now by Rich Tao. He's president of Engages. He is frequently on our show to talk about his Swing Voter Project focus groups, where he goes around the country talking to Americans who voted for Donald Trump in 2016, but then switched and voted for Joe Biden in 2020. This month, you are in Pennsylvania, is that correct?
That is correct.
Fantastic. Well, that is a big focus of a lot of punditry these days, because Pennsylvania is one of the key races that will decide control of the United States Senate and is going to, of course, also be a very important state in the 2024 presidential election. So tell me first a little bit about the big picture of these groups. You know, we know that these folks were Trump voters in 2016. They're Biden voters in 2020. Where are they coming down on that Senate race if you ask them to choose between the top two candidates, John Fetterman or Mehmet Oz?
So recognizing I'm talking to a pollster, I have to be very careful and let your audience know this is not a large sample. We're talking.
Oh, thank you, Rich. Yes. The margin of error is a gajillion. That is the scientific term.
Exactly. Exactly. But directionally, we saw among 13 Trump to Biden voters in Pennsylvania last week that 9 would take Fetterman, 2 would take Oz, and 2 were yet to be decided. They were still undecided. So the direction was clearly moving in Fetterman's favor with this crowd. And I should mention, 6 of these respondents were registered Republicans, 6 registered Democrats, 1 an independent.
This is interesting. I mean, I'm seeing this pop up in a couple of other states where you have, you know, these Republican candidates where there are some questions about whether they were the optimal candidate to have run in the general election, and some real reluctance on the part of Republicans who may not want to pull the lever for the Democratic candidate, but they're just not quite there yet, comfortable with pulling the lever for the Republican nominee. I've heard this pop up in states like Georgia. Sounds like this has popped up in your Pennsylvania race. I'd like to listen to a little bit of audio. You asked respondents to give you a one-word answer for what words they associate with Dr. Oz. Let's take a listen.
New Jersey, a doctor, TV.
I would say he's unqualified, and to me, he's kind of a joke.
Tragic weight loss con man.
Carpetbagger was the first thing that came to mind.
Oprah and pharmaceuticals.
Celebrity.
Like scam and lies. I always saw him pushing stuff.
He doesn't live in quite in the state of Pennsylvania. Lives on the outskirts.
Celebrity, doctor, entertainer.
Reality TV.
New Jersey.
Money.
Now, I am fascinated by the number of respondents who mentioned that Oz is from out of state. Now, of course, if you've been watching what, you know, the campaigns have been spending money on to drive messaging about their opponents, you wouldn't be as surprised, because Fetterman has put a lot behind the idea that Oz is, you know, somebody who's very wealthy and has a lot of houses and he doesn't actually live in the state. And of course, you don't have to look very hard to find, say, photos of Dr. Oz at a Yankees game wearing Yankees gear, you know, not exactly like, you know, the Philly fanatic, if you will. But I'm fascinated that in a time where inflation is so high, people are so concerned about crime, people are so concerned about all sorts of big issues, that something like a candidate living across the river in New Jersey for a lot of time would be such a big deal. Tell me a little, help me unpack that.
Well, it was interesting that we kept hearing that over and over again. And I think it was in many ways a proxy for he's not one of us. He's mm-hmm. not like us. And it's a nice sort of shorthand way of getting to that. And I think that's what we were hearing when we kept hearing New Jersey over and over again.
Now, what's fascinating, though, is, you know, these are voters who at one point in time, not in 2020, but in 2016, cast a ballot for Donald Trump. And whether that was because they wanted to send a shock to the system or what have you, I mean, Donald Trump is somebody who lived in a gilded skyscraper in New York City and yet managed to sort of convince average Americans that he's like one of them. I'm always fascinated by this dynamic. But, You know, to what extent has Fetterman, with his kind of hoodies and sweatshirts and, you know, has he persuaded Pennsylvanians, I am one of you?
I think he's done a more persuasive job with this crowd, certainly, than Oz has done. We had one woman, who, and I think you might play a clip of what they think of when they think of Fetterman. She said Braddock. All we hear about is Braddock, which is the town that Fetterman was the mayor of. So, yeah, I think Fetterman's trying to reinforce that he's a Pennsylvania guy through and through. He's one of them. Obviously, because of his visual appearance with the tattoos and the hoodie and looking like a bouncer outside of a nightclub, I think causes people to go, yeah, he's like a guy who I would know. And I think it's in sharp distinction to the way Oz carries himself and looks. So I think it's an interesting visual dynamic that I think also causes people to think that maybe Fetterman isn't as liberal as Oz is trying to make him out to be.
Well, let's take a listen to some audio from your focus group when you ask respondents to do that same exercise. Give me one word that comes to mind when you think of Fetterman, and then we'll talk about it.
Broad.
Cannabis.
I was going to say the same. Cannabis movie.
He wants to help people get out of jail.
I feel optimistic about him. He feels different than some of the candidates I'm used to seeing. I think that he has a younger approach or mindset than some of the other candidates running.
Raise taxes, tax evasion.
Intimidating.
Braddock. All you hear him say is about Braddock. Unpolished.
Tough guy.
Plain spoken and qualified.
And throw in the word tall.
I said that his health issues, unsure.
Let's talk a little bit first about, I heard a couple people mention cannabis, a couple other mention either, you know, justice reform or crime. Tell me a little bit about how those issues are playing a role in this race here in the final stretch.
Well, what's really interesting for your listeners who are not seeing all the ads flying back and forth between Oz and Fetterman. So Oz has been attacking Fetterman relentlessly over his criminal justice record and supposedly letting out murderers back on the street and just being very, very liberal in his views on the topic, Fetterman being liberal in his views. And so I was expecting to hear more complaints about that, and I didn't. And that was one of the interesting absences in the conversation. And the fact that they talked about how he wanted to help people who get him out of jail was sort of seen as a positive, that Fetterman has been promoting that he's in favor of legalizing marijuana, that was a positive for people in the state and in my groups. So what I expected to hear was a lot more negativity about that. I didn't hear it. And that definitely, to me, accrues to Fetterman's benefit.
Well, let's talk about then the other issue that was mentioned briefly in the roundup of one words, and that was Fetterman's health. This is something that has gotten, I would say, not a ton of attention in the media. You did have one reporter from NBC News over the last week or so say that she had done a one-on-one interview with Fetterman and there had needed to be some closed captions and some accommodations made. And she kind of got piled on by the rest of the media for having the audacity to sort of report on what she had seen, that the conversation did seem like Fetterman may have had, you know, some challenges. This does seem like a bit of a taboo thing to talk about, but it's clearly on at least some of these voters' minds. To what extent is Fetterman's health an issue at play in this race?
I think it's very simple, which is that for a lot of these folks, they're aware of it. It's a concern. They care about his own personal health, how he's doing personally as a human. But for only two or three of them, is it a voting issue? And it didn't seem to get in the way of their willingness to vote for him. So it's low down on the priority list of reasons to vote for or against Fetterman.
Now, one of the things that I had heard some folks say was like, look, the stroke in and of itself or his health status in and of itself isn't necessarily a problem because, frankly, you know, lots of people know someone who has gone through something like this, who has some kind of a disability or a health crisis. And so sort of attacking him for that is really fraught. On the other hand, there had been this sort of weird lack of transparency around it. And, you know, whether or not he is out on the campaign trail as much as perhaps Democrats would like. I mean, if he winds up not winning the race, there's going to be a lot of recriminations and a lot of finger pointing around that. But were there any folks that said, you know, I don't feel like we've seen him out enough? Because it does seem like we're in a different era of campaigning now where a candidate being out and about may be less important. I'm not sure. What are you hearing?
What I was hearing was that's not something that came up in the conversation. They didn't feel like they weren't seeing Fetterman. There was a bit of concern that he wasn't as forthcoming about his health that as he should have been. But again, those were not considerations that were going to be decisive in whether or not somebody voted for him.
So let's then talk about bigger picture, not just the individual race for Senate in Pennsylvania, but let's talk a little bit about its implications. In some of these other contests where I've seen a candidate who is perhaps not the most appealing or has some baggage, the question facing a lot of more Republican-leaning voters is, do I hold my nose and just pull the lever anyways? And there are some who have said, look, I'm just going to skip that vote on the ballot. You know, you have your respondents and your focus group said, I can't pick either of these folks, right? But as we get toward November 8th, and as the stakes become clear, and as it really people wake up to the idea that the control of the United States Senate, and with it all of the attendant powers, the ability to stop or allow the Biden administration to implement its agenda, to stop or allow certain judicial nominees, I mean, there's a lot of power in having the majority Senate. Do you think that ultimately partisans will come home and sort of get over their concerns about their own party's candidate?
I think partisans will. I think with this crowd I was talking to, that you had some people who just weren't comfortable with either candidate in a given race. There are a few of them, I think, who just might not vote. So certainly that's a consideration. I would say in the Senate race, I think 9 of the 13 said that what one thing that did matter to them and was a consideration on whether to vote for Fetterman or Oz was what party they're with and which party would control the Senate next year. That seemed to be far more important than, for example, their positions on a whole variety of issues. And so I think as we think about this, you know, and we think about these voters, so many of these voters are drawn to or repelled by personalities of the candidates. That's what matters more than a lot of their issue positions. They're trying to see whether they're going to vote for a good person or person that they're comfortable with. And so it's a very different dynamic. It's not necessarily, oh, so-and-so stands for X or so-and-so stands for Y. Remember, these are persuadable voters. And part of what persuades them is how they feel about the candidates personally.
Now, there's another race that is also a little less high profile in Pennsylvania, and that is the governor's race there, where you have Republican Doug Mastriano. He is someone who is a bit more out on the fringe, I think we can safely say. And in your focus group, you actually had fewer respondents who said that they preferred Josh Shapiro relative to Fetterman. You had 9 of 13 say they'd pick Fetterman, but you only had 8 of 13 say they picked Shapiro. I feel like if I went to anyone in Washington and said, there exists in America someone who is going to vote for Fetterman but isn't sure that they're going to vote for Shapiro, it would be like, what are you talking about? Where did you find this strange creature? Not to insult your participant who has this whatever combination of views, but tell me a little about that. The conventional wisdom is that Shapiro has got this in the bag and that the Senate race is going to be the closer one.
Yeah, I mean, again, I wouldn't judge entirely from this small sample. I would I'd be really careful, obviously. I don't need to tell that to one of the country's leading pollsters. But I think just, you know, with Shapiro, everybody had a different reason for being undecided. And I had 4 undecideds in the Shapiro-Mastriano race. So we had one person who just said she's seen ads from Shapiro. She just hasn't yet concentrated on it. She hasn't focused on it. She hasn't made up her mind. Okay, fine. And then we had another respondent who was really, really interesting. And he made an observation, very nuanced. But the crux of it was the Shapiro-Mastriano race isn't particularly close. And I'm more concerned, he said, about the Senate race with Fetterman and Oz than I am about Shapiro and Mastriano. And so I'm not so sure I want to waste a protest vote against Mastriano on Shapiro if Shapiro is already likely to win. And he talked about how in 2020 he voted for Biden as a protest against Trump, but he didn't particularly like Biden. And so he's sort of keeping very close to the vest, sort of his feelings about, well, I have this power to vote as a protest vote, but I want to use it sparingly. So if I have to use it, like to stop Mastriano, if like that race were really close, yeah, sure, I'd vote for Shapiro. But if I don't have to use it, if it looks like it's going to be a blowout race, why would I bother to vote for Shapiro when I'm not particularly excited about Shapiro? So anyway, that was the mindset he brought to a fascinating probing we did on that.
So I'm so glad that you spelled that out, because that is exactly what I have heard in I'm going to reserve details, because I'll talk about this on the show in a week or two when it comes out in the public. But in another critical swing state, did a focus group of voters and got kind of the same answer, which was, in this case, it was less about I think one race is a blowout or not, but it was more, you know, if I thought that it was all going to come down to like control of the Senate would come down to my vote, yeah, I'd hold my nose and I'd cast a vote that I feel is unsavory because I think the stakes are high. But if I actually think I don't have to hold my nose, if like I'd rather just be able to go to sleep at night knowing that I didn't cast that unsavory vote that I didn't like. So your respondent is not the first person that I have now heard in a focus group pop up over the last 48 hours that kind of takes that position. I want to turn then to the national environment, go beyond Pennsylvania for just a moment and talk about, or go beyond the races specific to Pennsylvania and talk about the national political environment. In your focus groups, you also talk to respondents about Joe Biden and what they are thinking about his agenda, how he has done, what do they think when they see him pop up on TV? He's also someone where there have been concerns about his health. Let's take a quick listen. What do your respondents feel when they see Joe Biden on TV?
Dissatisfied.
Indifferent.
Secondhand embarrassment.
I would say mixed to indifferent.
Anxiety.
Frustrated.
Bored.
I'm flabbergasted, shocked,
ambivalent, sad,
frustrated,
lost.
I would say my emotion is flabbergasted.
So this is pretty fascinating, because I feel like there's a really big gap between shocked and flabbergasted and bored. So walk me through how we wind up with both of those being thrown around as answers.
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously the same stimulus, the stimulus in this case being the president, has a different effect on different people based upon who they are and how they perceive politics and politicians. So for some of these people, Biden is sort of like this old, boring guy who just doesn't get them excited. They see him on TV and they're like, oh yeah, okay, fine. It's just that it doesn't stir much emotion at all. So they're kind of bored. Other people watch him, as you heard, they get flabbergasted because he'll say things that they think are not in touch with reality, or that he misspoke, or, you know, there's just a concern about his mental acuity. And it bothers a lot of these swing voters. So that's where you get this mix of different reactions. And so to me, I ask this question every month, and every month I get sort of the same category of responses, not necessarily exactly the same words, but what I don't hear is what I heard a year and a half ago when Biden first took office. He makes me feel calm. He makes me feel relaxed. He's reassuring. I feel a renewed sense of pride. That sort of post-Trump reaction about Biden is gone. And what you get now is sort of neutral to negative responses and very few positive ones.
Well, Rich, thank you so much again for coming on the show. You always bring us fascinating insights from this critical group of voters. There's going to be a lot of attention paid to Pennsylvania in the coming weeks. So thank you for helping us understand it a little bit more.
Great. Thank you so much.